This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Huge crowds lined Windsor's Long Walk as a procession accompanying the state hearse made its way to George Chapel for the committal service. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma.
The Dean of Windsor says we've come together to commit into the hands of God the soul of his servant, Queen Elizabeth.
Here in St. George's Chapel, where she so often worshipped, we are bound to call to mind someone whose uncomplicated yet profound Christian faith bore so much fruit.
During the service, the Queen was separated from her crown jewels, the imperial state crown, the orb and scepter, removed from their place on her coffin by the crown jeweller. They will ultimately be returned to the Tower of London, but stay for now with the Dean, who placed them carefully on the altar. Charles de Ledesma, London.
Diplomats and human rights advocates speaking on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly have called for the forceful action on China's alleged persecution of ethnic minorities. Abuses in the far western region of Xinjiang have been exposed for years by watchdogs and journalists, but were given a new with the report released by the UN's Human Rights Office last month, detailing the ruthless campaign of torture and ethnic cleansing. China has called that report a patchwork of false information. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. A Russian missile has blasted a crater close to a nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine, damaging nearby industrial equipment, but not hitting its three reactors. Ukrainian authorities denounced Monday's attack as an act of nuclear terrorism. Ukraine's nuclear operator said the missile struck within 300 meters of reactors of South Ukraine nuclear power plant. The strike followed warnings from Russian President Vladimir Putin of possible stepped-up attacks on Ukrainian infrastructure after his forces suffered humiliating battlefield setbacks. It also renewed fears of a possible radioactive disaster in the near seven-month war. One Western analyst said the Russian military was apparently trying to knock Ukrainian nuclear plants offline before winter sets in. U.S. officials report border crossing numbers for Venezuelans soared at the U.S.-Mexico border in August. AP correspondent Mike Rossi reports.
According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection data, the number of Venezuelans taken into custody at the U.S. border with Mexico soared in August, making Venezuela the second largest nationality after Mexico among migrants crossing the U.S. border illegally. Officials say U.S. authorities stopped Venezuelans 25,349 times in August. That marked a 43% rise over July, and it was four times higher than August 2021. Overall, U.S. authorities made 203,598 stops of migrants in August. That was slightly up from July, but below the over 213,000 stops in August 2021. Mike Gracia, Washington.
A strong earthquake has shaken Mexico's Pacific coast. AP correspondent Norman Hall.
A magnitude 7.6 earthquake shook Mexico's central Pacific coast, setting off a seismic alarm in the Rattle capital on the anniversary of devastating quakes in 1985 and 2017. The U.S. Geologic Survey initially put the magnitude at 7.5. It hit at 1:05 p.m. local time and was centered 23 miles southeast of Aquila, near the boundary of Colima and Michoacán states. Officials in Michoacán reported no significant damage. The mayor of Mexico City tweeted that there were no reports of damage in the capital. I'm Norman Hall.
Hurricane Fiona is dumping more rain on Puerto Rico. The deluge comes a day after the storm knocked out power and water to most of the island. National Guard troops have rescued hundreds of people who got stranded. The governor warned that it could take days to get the lights back on. The blow from Fiona was made more devastating because Puerto Rico has yet to recover from Hurricane Maria, which killed nearly 3,000 people and destroyed the power grid in 2017. 5 years later, more than 3,000 homes on the island are still covered by blue tarps. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, September 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Nuofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the United Nations General Assembly opens in New York with a focus on sustainable development goals.
We meet at a moment of great peril for our world. Conflicts and climate catastrophe, mistrust and division, poverty, inequality and discrimination.
Alarm bells as Russia allegedly shells a nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine.
The missile hit the area within 300 meters from the nuclear reactors. This is extremely dangerous and extremely scary. It was really a huge risk of a catastrophe.
And Britain and the world say farewell to Queen Elizabeth II with pomp and pageantry. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The 2022 United Nations General Assembly got underway Monday in New York with a convocation dedicated to the body's longer-term metrics known as the Sustainable Development Goals. But speakers at the event, including United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, were mindful of the pressing nature of global crisis.
We meet at a moment of great peril for our world. Conflicts and climate catastrophe, mistrust and division, poverty, inequality and discrimination. Rising costs of food and energy, unemployment and declining incomes, massive displacement and dislocation, and the ongoing effects of a global pandemic. Lack of access to finance for developing countries to recover, a crisis not seen in a generation. Each peril is pushing the Sustainable Development Goals further out of reach. And in the face of such perils, it is tempting to put our long-term development priorities to one side, to leave them for a sunny day, but development cannot wait. Young people and future generations are demanding action. We cannot let them down. This is a definitive moment. All of you here today and those tuning in from around the world give me immense hope that we can put our hands on the wheel of progress and steer a new course. That we can rescue the Sustainable Development Goals and get back on track to building the better world that leaves no one behind. The world has a long to-do list. We need finance and investment from the public and private sectors. We need a reformed financial architecture that benefits developing countries, providing critical financing and debt relief. This is the only sustainable pathway to address the obscene inequalities that exist in every country while ensuring that the world doesn't slide into a recession.
That's United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Ukraine's nuclear energy operator said Monday a Russian missile struck near a nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine. Energoatom said in a statement that the missile landed 300 meters from Ukraine's second-largest nuclear power plant but did not damage its reactors. Anna Chernikova in Odessa updates Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller.
The missile hit the area within 300 meters from the nuclear reactors. This is extremely dangerous and extremely scary. It was really a huge risk of a catastrophe. Currently, we know that all three power units of the plant are operating normally. There are no casualties among the station staff. President Zelensky also commented on this immediately. He mentioned that this attack is basically something that proves once again that Russian forces, I will quote, we have to stop it before it's too late. This is what we know for the moment. Hopefully, not going to be another attack on the plant, at least for now. During the day, there were no attacks, so we will continue to have our eye on that.
And briefly update us on Ukrainian counteroffensives.
Counteroffensive actions continue in both areas, in the east as well. And today we heard about another settlement that was liberated in Luhansk region. Also, Ukrainian forces are quite successful in the area of Oskil River in the Kharkiv region, and they continue to consolidate positions in that area. If we talk about Kherson region, also situation is, for the moment, is stable. And just a couple of hours ago, the representative of the South defense mentioned and reported that Russian units in the South are basically blocked by the Ukrainian forces. They're blocked between the right bank of the Dnipro River and between the armed forces of Ukraine.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova speaking with Flashpoint Ukraine Steve Miller from Odessa. Ukraine's ambassador to the United States on Sunday accused Russia of committing war crimes of massive proportions. Oksana Marakova cited evidence collected at mass burial sites, including one in Izium, a city recently retaken by Ukraine after months under Russian occupation. VOA's Marcos Hatton has more.
Ukrainian officials have been recovering bodies from a mass burial site near Izium in the Kharkiv region. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Ukrainian forces have discovered more than 10 torture chambers in areas formerly held by the Russians.
Torture was a widespread practice in the occupied territory. That is what the Nazis did. This is what the Russian fascists do. And they will answer the same way, both on the battlefields and in the courtrooms.
Russia has repeatedly denied accusations of targeting Ukrainian civilians. Ukrainian Ambassador Oksana Markarova says international investigators are present at the mass gravesite looking for evidence of war crimes.
Preparing not only our national criminal cases against Russians, but also international courts and other countries' investigations. So the work is done as we speak there.
Markarova said the discoveries in territory formerly occupied by Russian troops make it imperative to recapture all occupied territory in Ukraine. In the recaptured town of Kozacha Lopan, also in the Izium region, Mayor Vyacheslav Zadorenko showed journalists what he called a makeshift Russian prison and torture chamber. He said, "Here you can see that the bars were welded freshly. It's not even rusty. So we haven't just found a cellar in which fruit was kept. This cellar was precisely prepared to keep our civilian people as prisoners." Ukrainian forces took back parts of the Kharkiv region during a recent counteroffensive. Russian forces retreated from Izium, leaving behind large amounts of equipment and ammunition. Marcus Harton, VOA News.
Britain and the world said farewell to Queen Elizabeth II with pomp and pageantry. Crowds massed in the streets of London and at Windsor Castle to honor a monarch whose 70-year reign defined an era. The first state funeral since Winston Churchill's drew world leaders and other royalty. Before the service, a bell tolled 96 times for each of Elizabeth's life. Royal Navy sailors pulled a gun carriage carrying her flag-draped coffin to Westminster Abbey before pallbearers bore it inside. Atop the coffin sat a handwritten note from King Charles III. After a committal service at the chapel in Windsor Castle, the coffin was lowered into the royal vault. Reporter Henry Ridgewell was on the scene.
I'm in Hyde Park in central London, and the funeral service for Queen Elizabeth II has just finished. Her body is being taken in procession across central London. Tens of thousands of people have come to Hyde Park and to other parks in London and to city centres across the country, to cinemas, to pubs, where the Queen's funeral has been put on the big screen. And it's interesting, if you speak to the people here about why they've come, some say they felt a deep personal connection with the Queen. They feel like they've lost somebody they loved. For others, it's about respect for a monarch who was on the throne for 70 years and gave her life to the service of the country. And for others, they say they just wanted to be part of history, that they wanted to be part of a day they would never forget. And so today is the culmination of 10 days of official mourning for Britain. It is the culmination of the second Elizabethan era.
That's VOA's Henry Ridgewell reporting from London. In other news, a NASA lander on Mars has captured the vibrations and sounds of four meteorites striking the planet's surface. Scientists reported Monday that Mars InSight has detected seismic and acoustic waves from a series of impacts in 2020 and 2021. A satellite orbiting the red planet confirmed the impact locations as far as 100 meters from the lander. Scientists are delighted by the detections, a first for Mars, and the resulting craters. They've been waiting for more than 3 years for InSight seismometer to sense impacts from incoming space rocks. InSight has already detected more than 1,300 Mars quakes. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Somali army commanders say their forces killed more than 100 al-Shabaab militants during weekend offensives to retake territory from the Islamist militant group. Witnesses say the troops also recaptured two villages that al-Shabaab had held for more than a decade. Mohamed Desani reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
The Somali National Army said Monday that troops launched a fresh offensive against al-Shabaab in the central Hiran region over the weekend. Senior army commanders in Hiran who spoke to VOA via phone said that fierce firefights between the military and al-Shabaab began early Saturday, especially in the villages of Abori and Yasaman. They told VOA that 75 al-Shabaab militants were killed in the fighting in Yasaman and 30 in the vicinity of Abori. Local residents told VOA via WhatsApp that troops took control of both villages, which had been under al-Shabaab control for more than a decade. Speaking to media at the front line, Abdulfatah Hassan Afra, the former governor of Hiran, said troops are defeating the enemy of Somali people, referring to al-Shabaab. He says, our victories are bringing more victories, and it is coming one after the other, and their defeat will bring them more defeat. By the will of Allah, God, we are wishing that they will be cleared out of the country. Somalia's information ministry said Sunday that the army's recent offensives have killed 200 al-Shabaab fighters and liberated 30 villages from the group in all. Malik Abdullah is a member of the Somali Federal Parliament from Hiran. He told VOA via WhatsApp that the fighting in Hiran also involved local militia, known as Ma'wislay. He said residents of the village have had enough of al-Shabaab. He says the reason why the people of Hiran or the people of this region fight is because they could not bear the hardship they faced day and night. He says they stood up to survive after al-Shabaab blew up their water wells and their village burned. Al-Shabaab has yet to comment on the army and the information ministry's claims. But in a video released by the group media wing Sunday night, spokesman Ali Mahmoud Rage, known as Ali Dere, said the group is ready for the war that Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud declared on them. Rage warned Mogadishu residents to stay away from hotels that are frequented by Somali government officials. President Mahmoud, who was elected in May, announced that his administration will wage a total war against the al-Shabaab network after the group attacked a hotel in Mogadishu, killing more than 20 people and wounded at least 100 others. Mohamed Daisane for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Thank you, Mohamed. With a third La Niña weather event underway, Australia is changing the way it prepares for natural disasters. Two key emergency agencies have been merged after criticism of the official response of record-breaking floods earlier this year. Phil Mercer reports.
Australia is preparing for a potentially damaging spring and summer. Severe storms, intense rainfall and large hail are expected to hit the eastern states in the next 3 months, while bushfires are expected in northern parts of Australia. A third consecutive La Niña event is underway, which typically brings above-average rainfall in spring and summer. Climate experts have warned that global warming is making this naturally occurring weather pattern even worse. Australia has created the National Emergency Management Agency, a merger of two government-run bodies, the National Recovery and Resilience Agency and Emergency Management Australia. Officials have said the new agency will improve Australia's response to natural disasters. Earlier this year, residents in some flood-hit towns were forced to fend for themselves because emergency services were overwhelmed. Volunteers in the city of Lismore, north of Sydney, took to small boats and other watercraft to rescue residents stranded in fast-moving floodwaters. Murray Watt, the Federal Minister for Emergency Management, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that the authorities will now be better prepared.
It will be a difficult time, and that's why I think that we need to make sure as a federal government that we are fully prepared by combining the disaster response and disaster recovery capacity of the federal government. It leads to a much more coordinated effort.
Over the past 18 months, many communities in Australia have been affected by floods. Some have been inundated more than once. It's estimated that one in 10 Australian homes are now vulnerable to flooding, according to the Insurance Council of Australia. Other experts in Australia are urging communities to prepare their own flood disaster escape plans. This includes identifying the best route to safe locations, always having at least half a tank of fuel in a vehicle, and turning off electricity, gas and water at the mains before departure. Australia is a land familiar with nature's extremes. Heatwaves are its deadliest natural hazard. An official inquiry into the 2019-20 Black Summer bushfires warns that climate change was inevitable and that compounding disasters in Australia would become more frequent. The October 2020 report of the Royal Commission into Natural Disaster Arrangements said that natural hazards such as wildfires, floods and storms could happen simultaneously or one after another. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
Saturn, according to recent estimates, is about 4.503 billion years old, but its famous rings are only about 100 million years old. Scientists have been trying to find out why those rings are so much younger than the planet itself. A new study published in the journal Science and led by researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology suggests that at one time, Saturn had at least one extra moon along with its current stable of 83 moons. Dubbed Chrysalis by the authors, the study proposes that the moon was ripped apart when it grazed its host planet about 160 million years ago. The researchers' findings suggest that it then broke into fragments that may have continued to float in orbit. It's thought that those fragments broke into even smaller icy bits over the years and formed Saturn's iconic rings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Every year, world leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there. Delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
Hey there, it's Shauna Renee, also known as the Lady DJ, inviting you to join me every Thursday at 10 and 2200 UTC for today's hit countdown. Each week, I count down the top 20 songs in pop music according to Billboard and Rolling Stone magazines, but more importantly, according to you, the VOA listeners. Again, that's Thursdays at 10 and 2200 UTC right here on VOA 1.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is determined to prevent the Iranian regime from acquiring a nuclear weapon. President Joe Biden has repeatedly made that clear. He has also made clear he believes the best way to achieve that goal is through diplomacy. Since April 2021, the United States has engaged in indirect negotiations with Iran with the aim of a mutual return to full implementation of the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. The United States exited the deal under then-President Donald Trump in 2018, and since then, Iran's breakout time to produce enough material for a nuclear weapon, should it choose to do so, has been dramatically reduced from about a year prior to the U.S. exit from the deal to a matter of weeks or less today. In an interview on Al Arabiya, U.S. National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communication John Kirby emphasized that regardless of whether a mutual return to full implementation of the JCPOA is ultimately achieved, the United States is fully prepared to counter Iran's destabilizing activities in the region, which have continued to escalate since the U.S. left the JCPOA in 2018. With or without a nuclear deal, we're going to defend our national security interests, said NSC Coordinator Kirby. We can do that economically with sanctions that still stay in place. And we can do that militarily in terms of defending our people and our facilities. The United States would prefer not to take such steps, said Mr. Kirby. Iran has some decisions it has to make, not just with respect to the nuclear deal on the table, but what kind of future they want to see for themselves going forward in the region. Mr. Kirby noted that Iran's leaders are the ones supporting terrorist networks. They are the ones threatening maritime traffic. They are the ones contributing to destabilization on the political forefront inside the Middle East. And they can make some decisions on their own to stop doing those kinds of things. And they would not face the kind of pressure they're going to get from the United States and other countries, economically and militarily.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.